I'm going to read several poems. I'll begin with the title poem of my last book, The Singing. I was walking home down a hill near our house under a balmy afternoon, under the blossoms of the pear trees that go flamboyantly mad here every spring with their burgeoning forth, when a young man turned in from a corner singing. No, it was more of a cadence shouting, most of which I couldn't catch, I thought, because the young man was black, speaking black. It didn't matter. I could tell he was making his song up, which pleased me. He was nice-looking, husky, dressed in some style of big pants, obviously full of himself, hence his lyrical flowing over. We went along in the same direction, then he noticed me there almost beside him, and big, he shouted, sang, big, and I thought how droll to have my height incorporated in his song, so I smiled, but the face of the young man showed nothing. He looked, in fact, pointedly away, and his song changed. I'm not a nice person, he chanted. I'm not a nice person. No menace was meant, I gathered, no particular threat, but he did want to be certain. I knew that if my smile implied I conceived of anything like concord between us, I should forget it. That's all. Nothing else happened. His song became indecipherable to me again. He arrived where he was going, a house where a girl in braids waited for him on the porch. That was all. No one saw, no one heard. All the unasked and unanswered questions were left where they were. It occurred to me to sing back, I'm not a nice person either, but I couldn't come up with a tune. Besides, I wouldn't have meant it, nor he have believed it. Both of us knew just where we were, in the duet we composed, the equation we made, the conventions to which we were condemned. Sometimes it feels, even when no one is there, that someone, something, is watching and listening. Someone to rectify, redo, remake. This time again, though, no one saw nor heard. No one was there. That poem was actually written about an event that happened in Princeton. I'll read a poem now that a part of it takes place in the country around Princeton 50 or so years ago. The poem is called Peggy. The name of the horse of my friend's friend, a farmer's son whose place we'd passed when we rode out that way, I remember. Not his name, just his mare's, Peggy, a gleaming, well-built gray, surprising considering her one-stall plank shed. I even recall where they lived, Half-Acre Road. It sounds like frost, and looked it, unpaved silos and barns. I went back not long ago. It's built up with rows on both sides of bloated tract mansions. One lot was still empty, so I stopped and went through and found that behind the wall of garages and hydrants, the woods had stayed somehow intact and wild, wilder, the paths overgrown, the derelict pond a sink of weeds. We'd gallop by there, up a hill, our horses would sweat, we'd sweat. Then we'd skirt Peggy's fields and cross to more woods and a meadow, the scent of which once, mown hay, was so sweet, I taste it still. But now, the false mullioned windows, the developer scrawny maples, the lawns, I didn't know what to do with it all. It just ached, like forgetting someone you love is dead and wanting to call them, and then you remember, and they're dead again. You want? This is a poem of childhood called The Gaff. The first two lines are a little complicated, so I'll try to read them very slowly. If that someone who's me, yet not me, yet who judges me, is always with me, as he is, shouldn't he have been there when I said so long ago that thing I said? If he who rakes me with such not trivial shame for minor sins now were there then, shouldn't he have warned me he'd even now devastate me for my unpardonable affront? I'm a child then, yet already I've composed this conscience beast who harries me. Is there anything else I can say with certainty about who I was, except that I, that he, could already draw from infinitesimal transgressions complex chords of remorse, and orchestrate ever undiminishing retribution from the hapless rest of myself? The son of some friends of my parents has died, and my parents, paying their call, take me along, and I'm sent out with the dead boy's brother and some others to play. We're joking around, and some words come to my mind, which to my amazement are said. How do you know when you can laugh when somebody dies? Your brother dies, is what's said, and the others go quiet, the backyard goes quiet, everyone stares, and I want to know now why that someone in me who's me yet not me let me say it. Shouldn't he have told me the contrition cycle would from then be ever upon me? It didn't matter that I'd really only wanted to know how grief ends and when. I could hear the boy's mother sobbing inside, then stopping, sobbing, then stopping. Was the end of her grief already there? Had her someone in her told her it would end? Was there someone in her kinder to her, not tearing at her as mine did, still does, me, for guessing grief someday ends? Is that why her sobbing stops sometimes? She didn't laugh, though, or I never heard her. How do you know when you can laugh? Why couldn't someone have been there in me, not just to accuse me, but to explain? The kids were playing again. I was playing. I didn't hear anything more from inside. The way sometimes what's in me is silent too, and sometimes, though never really, forgets.